We're holding on page 150 in Brachos, four lines from the end of the first paragraph. You have a long paragraph that begins on the previous page and takes up most of this page. Middle of Os Kuf Tes for those using other editions, and the line begins Aleph Siyah Gasa. We were discussing various things that a Talmid Chacham shouldn't do. We had a list of six things that it's a gnai, that it's a shameful thing for a Talmid Chacham to do. The first one was to wear perfume in the street, and that was the connection with the subject of the parak, because we were talking about people would put fragrant oil on their hands, aromatic oil on their hands after the meal to clean their hands, and then what do you do with the excess on your hands? You wipe it on the waiter's head, unless the waiter is a Talmid Chacham, then he's not supposed to be going out to the street perfumed, so then you wipe it on the wall instead. So we had this list of six things, and we went through the details of each of them, why it is, what are the details about each one. So the Braisa had said, the Yesh Omim, that there were Yesh Omim, two other things that also a Talmid Chacham should not be doing. The first one was, Ba'al Yafsiya Psiya Gasa. We said that a Talmid Chacham should not be taking large steps. And why not? What's wrong with large steps? Yom Amar, because we learn in a Braisa, Psiya Gasa, Nitalas Echad, Mechamesh Meyas, Mima'ur Einav Shal Adam. Taking big steps takes away 1/500th of a person's eyesight. So it's no good for you. Now, there's the question then, does that mean that if a person takes 500 such steps, they'll be blind? So there's a Tosfos elsewhere that explains the same way, for example, you have a line in the Gemara in the Nedarim, it was recently in Daf Yomi, talking about visiting a sick person, where visiting him takes away 1/60th of the illness. Does that mean if 60 people visit him, he'll be cured? No, it means each one takes away 1/60th of what's there at the time. So the first one takes away 1/60th. The second one takes away 1/60th of the 59 parts that are left. The next one, 1/60th of that, and so forth. Mathematically, you can figure out, it comes out, if you had 60 people visit him, you'd have, let's say, he'd still have around 35 or 40% left of his illness. Same thing over here, says Tosfos. One possibility is that a person takes 500 such steps. It means his eyesight will be diminished a great deal, but not that he'll be completely blind. There's other answers as well, one of them being that only the first time that he does it is it a problem. After that, his body gets used to it, and therefore it's not a problem. So we're going to answer, actually, we're going to say that there's a way to overcome it with a ruchniistic thing involving kiddush. But in other words, on a gashniistic level, if psia gasa takes away from a person's eyesight, one answer is each time it takes progressively less. And the other answer is it only does it the first time. A person does that, but afterwards, if he keeps on doing psia gasa, it doesn't keep on having a cumulative effect. So my takante, how do you fix it up? How do you restore that lost eyesight? Lahadale the kiddusha de Bei Shimshi. He can return it by kiddush on Friday night. Bei Shimshi, by the way, literally means Beinash. It's just the Aramaic word for Beinash Moshes. So in principle, it can mean Beinash Moshes of any day of the week. However, there's a Rashi in Psugas that points out an interesting idea that says that the Gemara often uses the word Bei Shimshi, like here, to mean Dafka Friday night. Because other days of the week, there's not really a great deal of difference whether it's Bein HaShemoshes, a Tuesday going into Wednesday, let's say. Is it Tuesday or is it Wednesday? For the most part, it doesn't make a difference. The only difference is going to be, okay, if you have a baby born during that time, what day is his bris? But for the most part, it doesn't make a difference. But Friday going into Shabbos, it's a big difference whether it's Friday or whether it's Shabbos. Therefore, people came to use the word Bei Shimshi to mean specifically Friday night. Anyway, with Kiddush, Friday night is how you restore it. So what does it mean? So Rashi explains it means you drink from the cup of Kiddush. Marsha brings over here from Rishonim who say, and actually it's brought in the Torah that people would actually put it on their eyes. That the idea was, in other words, it wasn't just drinking the wine of Kiddush, it was actually dipping your fingers in it and putting it on your eyes. But so we do by Havdalah. So Marsha mentioned that there is the idea that we do that by Havdalah because of Chibuv Mitzvah, to show how precious the Mitzvah is to us. But by Kiddush, you don't necessarily see people doing it. I think there are some Sfaradim that actually have a minhag to do it by Kiddush as well, but you have more of a universal minhag.
To look on the inside of the glass of the wine.
To look inside the glass, that's something else. That's a halacha. Yitin Einim Bakois. That's actually a halacha that when you're making a bracha on anything, you're supposed to look at it Before you make the bracha. So actually what you do is, so by Kiddush, actually what it says, what it's brought in Shulchan Aruch, during Vayichulu, you should be looking at the candles, And then by Kiddush itself, before you say the bracha bar priya gofen, you look at the wine in the cup. So the idea is, in other words, so we're saying that restores a person's eyesight. Marsha points out another meaning of it can be, it doesn't mean necessarily anything having to do with making Kiddush per se, just the fact, on Shabbos itself, you're not going to walk Psia Gasa, you're not even allowed to, it actually says in Halacha, you're not supposed to walk Psia Gasa on Shabbos, you're not supposed to walk on Shabbos like the way you do on weekdays, automatically, therefore, your eyesight will be restored, because on Shabbos, you're not going to be walking Psia Gasa. I saw an explanation on it. I don't remember the marker of it. That the idea is the two neiris of Shabbos, neiris gematria 250. The two of them together, the two neiris that are lit on Shabbos are 500. So therefore, that undoes the effect of the 1/500th of your eyesight that was removed during the week. And the idea being also, what does it mean? A person is running around Psia Gasa. Is they think that the person thinks that his establos, what he's doing in order to, in his efforts for Parnassah is really what makes him successful. And we know it's not so. Comes Shabbos and you have to recognize that Eibishter runs the world, Birkas Shemitashir, then that restores your eyesight, that gives you a proper perspective to be able to look at the world properly and realize that, and then realize that the Eibishter runs it and not that you're running around Psia Gasa is what makes things happen. Another one. Another one we said, another of the Yesh Emim thing, was that a Talmid Chacham should not walk with his head held high. Like we learned the other day, the Rambam phrases it, Hilchos Deis, when a person is preoccupied with his business, he walks with his head down a little bit, that's the way a person ought to be walking. So why? Because we say in a Braisa, a person who walks with his head upright, even if he walks 4 amas like that, it's as if he's pushing away the feet of the Shechina. The Shechina, so to speak, wants to be below, down here, the matzim asarat kochem, or at least the matzim dalar amas being the height of a person, and a person is holding his head high, it's as if he's pushing Hashem's feet away. So in other words, the person is acting as though the Shechina is not above. Eitz Yosef has a long discussion over here that says that, really nobody is supposed to be going to Koimah Skufa. In fact, we started saying, right, it's not Derech Eretz to, and then we're saying it's actually also to. So he discusses that, we're talking about, let's say a person is walking less than 4 amas. So to walk less than 4 amas for Koimah Skufa is not actually Osir, but it's not the right thing to do. And if he's walking 4 amas, then there's an actual issue in it, and that's what we're saying in particular for a Talmid Chacham to be even less than 4 amas, it's still a gnai for a Talmid Chacham to do. Interesting, by the way, as far as he also talks about, what about when he said about the 500th of the eyesight, why are we calling it a gnai for a Talmid Chacham? If it's a matter of sakana, if it's a matter of that's actually affecting your eyesight, then say that it's a sakana. Why are you calling it particularly a gnai for a Talmid Chacham? So he says that maybe the point is, since we're saying there is, after all, since there is a way of fixing it up, you with Kiddush, whether it's drinking the Kiddush, whether it's putting it on your eyes, whatever it is, so you could say, in that case, what's the big deal? Nevertheless, even though it is possible to fix it up, still a Talmid Chacham shouldn't be walking with Psia Gasa in the first place. For him, it's a gnai. For a regular person, if he does, it's not such a gnai. A regular person is not expected to behave in a certain way anyway. So therefore, if he does, big deal, and then he has a way of restoring it with Kiddush. But a Talmid Chacham shouldn't be doing it in the first place. Ben Yehoyada points out another interesting idea in this regard. He brings a story, and he brings a well-known story involving a Rav in Mitzrayim, a Rav in Egypt about 400 years ago. His name was Rav Chaim Tafusi. This Rav, he was a dayan there for many years in different communities in Egypt. When he got old, he started going blind. So his enemies started saying, you know what, it says in the Torah, he must have been taking bribes during all the years when he was a dayan. So he davens to the Eidishter and says, please show that they're wrong, and I never took bribes and restore my eyesight. And sure enough, the Eidishter did. So from then on, they called him Rav Chaim Bala Nes. So therefore, applying that to our Gemara, says Ben Yehoyada, the same idea. If the Talmid Chacham's eyes start going dim because he's walking with large steps with Psia Gasa, people are going to start accusing him that he was taking Shechad. Therefore, for him, it's a gnai more than it is for anybody else to be losing his eyesight, and therefore he should take every possible method to avoid that. The Mishnah goes on to talk about, now you have the dinim in Hilchos Brachos of Iker and Tafel. you have where you're eating something primary, and along with it, you're eating something else, which is secondary to it, so then you only make the bracha on the ikar. We've talked about it before in Hilchos Brachas that we were learning in Kitzur Shulchan Aruch. Common examples of it are, for example, ice cream in a cone, or cereal with milk, or all kinds of things, or bread with, or a sandwich with something inside it, etc. So you always just make the bracha on the ikar. So the Mishnah describes you can have a case where even bread is considered the tuffel. And the Mishnah describes you're eating something salty, and you're eating bread with it, so the bread is really meant in order to keep the salt from being so harmful to you. So then the bread is the tuffel, and then as long as you're eating the salty thing first, then you would actually make a bracha on it first. So the Gemara discusses. So that's the idea. If the herring is so salty that then you're eating some bread with it to cut the sharpness of the herring, then you would in fact only make a bracha on the herring. There are rules on that, though. One thing is it has to be that you're eating the ikar first. If you were to eat the bread first, you would in fact say the bracha on the bread. However, actually, no, there's more than that also. It has to be that the ikar is objectively more important than the tuffel. So that's actually what the Gemara asked. Where do you ever find, how is herring or any salty food like that more important than bread? Bread, after all, is meant to fill you up. So the Gemara explains that you're talking about if a person is eating Peres Ginoisar. Ginoisar is an area in Eretz Yisrael around the Kinneret. So there are places in Gemara and Midrashim or whatever where it calls the Kinneret the Yam Ginoisar, Yamashal Ginoisar or whatever. It comes from the word Gan Sar, which means the gardens of the princes, because they had the ground there was and still is very fertile, and they grew all kinds of delicious fruits over there that were suitable for princes and noblemen. Anyway, so the Gemara talks about, so you can have people who go to eat those Peres Ginoisar, now they're very, very sweet. So therefore, the sweetness is going to be too much for you, as we're going to have examples in the Gemara over here. So therefore, along with them, you eat something salty in order to cut the sweetness. But then, now, then you need something to go with that in order that the salt is not too much for you either, so therefore you eat bread with it. So therefore, the fruit, being that the fruit itself is the ikar, you went there for the purpose of eating the fruit, and the fruit itself is so juicy and delectable, then therefore it's considered even more important than bread. And that would be the example where bread is a tuffel. So the Gemara says, Amar Rav Baba Chana, Ki hava az linen basre de Rav Yechanan, l'meichal peres ginoisar, when we Talmidim would follow Rav Yechanan to go and eat fruit of ginoisar. Now why would they be going to eat? Why were they going on a field trip or something? So one interesting point is that they went every so often, you know, every so often a person ought to go and see the wonders that the Eibishter created in the world. And this is an example of that. So you have the Eibishter created delicious fruits in the world. So once in a while, you should go and see them and enjoy them and get a greater appreciation of course, from that. They say, for example, in that connection, they say about Rav Shamshon Rafal Hirsch, that one time when he lived to be 80, he was thinking of going on a trip. So his family is telling him, look, you're so old, where do you think you're going? He says, but when I come in front of the base in Shomaila, they're going to ask me, Shamshon, did you see my Alps, the beautiful mountains over there in Europe? So there, I don't know if he actually ever went to see them, but the point is, there is this idea that you have to appreciate what the Eibishter put in the world. So they're going there to appreciate these payers, you know, he said. Another point is, you see, in fact, actually, that in the story of Mais Bereshis, when it talks about the real focus over there in the pasuk, if you look, like you have, you know, all the grains and vegetables and whatever, all like just done up in a couple of words, Esav Mazriya Zera, then you have the focus, Eitz Pri, Oisa Pri, Lamina, Yasher Zare, Bayala Oretz, that shows the kindness that the Eibishter does to us much more than the staple stam that he provides us. You have something in that. That particular verse actually comes from a couple of Rabbi Avigdor Miller's drushes, but you actually have something very similar that we find actually in a sicha that Rebbe talks about in Parshas Kisetze, when you have the dinim over there that a worker in a field is entitled to eat on the job. He's harvesting grain. He's entitled to eat from the grain. He's harvesting fruit. He's entitled to eat from the fruit. And the pasuk puts the fruit first, so that Rebbe points out, because the idea is we Yidden are like workers in the Eibishter's field. First, it mentions the fruit to show that first the Eibishter is giving us the luxuries, so to speak, and we have the right to have hana from them in this world. And only then is it mentioning the basics, the staples, like when you're harvesting grain. So there is the idea, you know, the Eibishter gave us a world in order to enjoy, and therefore, sort of Yidden is taking his Talmidim sometimes on a field trip to do that. Another point actually he makes is that also you have that the fruit of Dinoisa was in a way would be the closest experience you could get in our world to the Gashmias of Gan Eden. Gan Eden, after all, was a physical place. Adam and Chava were there, so that's another reason to take them there in order that a person should realize that there is a Gan Eden and get some idea of what it's all about. Anyway, so when they would go, he says, Ki Havein and Bei Meya, when there were 100 of us Talmidim, Man Katin and Lelecho Chad B'Chad Asara Asara. Each one of the 100 Talmidim would pick 10 fruits. So altogether we'd have 1,000. V'chi Havein and Bei Asara, if only 10 of us went, Man Katin and Lelecho Chad B'Chad Meya Meya, then each of us would pick 100 fruits. Either way, we wanted to have 1,000 fruits available. The Maharal talks about in a lot of places. There are also places it talks about Chassidus, Safi Kabbalah, that each multiple of 10 represents a higher level in Olamos. 1 represents one level, 10 represents the next higher level, 100, so 1,000 represents like the ultimate sort of. V'chom Me'a Minayhu, every 100 of those Peres were so large, have a Machzik Lahu Tzana by Tlos Asabi. Each 100 of them, it would take a basket that holds 3 Sa to fit them. A Sa is a saw is a unit of volume, not of weight, but in terms of volume would be the volume of about 50 pounds of water. So you're talking about then that in other words each of these pairs had a volume of about 5 pounds. Every 100 of them rather. Actually, the Marshal has a girsa that each of them, that 100 of them wouldn't even fit into a basket of 3 saw. In other words, that was so large that they would overflow such a basket. Anyway, the point is they were very big and they were also very juicy. But Achelahu, Rabbi Yochanan would eat the fruit. Umishtaba, in fact, Marshal has the gears of Achelahu Lakulu, he would eat all of them. Umishtaba, Deloitam Ziyuna. And afterwards, Rabbi Yochanan would swear that he hadn't eaten Ziyuna. Now, Ziyuna means something edible. So the last thing is Ziyuna, Safadadah. The fact is the food is edible. Ela Ema Mizoyna. He didn't use the word Ziyuna, but rather Mizoyna, something satisfying. The fruit was very juicy and sweet and delectable, but it wasn't the kind of thing that fills you up. So even after he ate 1,000 of them, he still had room for lots more. As you find, the Gemara and Megillah, for example, it expresses the idea, Rav Chol B'Sim HaShchiach, there's always room for good food. You know, your kids or your grandkids will always tell you that, I don't have room for the food anymore, but I still have room for dessert. So Rabbi Yochanan was the same thing. And the Gemara says, now the other Talmidim would eat from this fruit as well. Rabbi Bohu Ochel, Rabbi Bohu would be eating from this fruit, Ad Dahab Shorik Le Dudra Me Apuse, until a fly would, if a fly landed on his forehead, it would slide off because it would be so much of the juice and the fatness of the fruit is oozing out through the pores of his skin that even a fly on his forehead would fall off. Rav Ami and Rav Asi would eat from the fruit so much until their hair fell out. So this is all. They're like overdosing on the Eidishta's goodness as much as possible, and then they can't get enough. Rav Shimon ben Lakish have a ochel ad demorid. Rav Shimon ben Lakish would eat so much of the fruit that he'd be on a sugar high. He would go crazy. But Amalehu Rav Yochanan l'devei nesia. Rav Yochanan would have to inform the family of the Nasi who lived nearby. Have a mishadalei Rav Yehuda nesia balushi abasrei. So Rav Yehuda nesia, who was the Nasi at that time, would have to send policemen, or actually Rashi translates balushi as uchlusei bnei adam, groups of people. People to go and find him, umaisu, or the base, and get him safely home, because he's like, I'm too much of a sugar high to be able to find his own way home. So, Poshet, they were overdosing on a lacourse. Marashah mentions, by the way, that for this reason, this also gives us a new insight in what the Meraglim were complaining about. When they brought back the fruit of Eretz Yisrael, so they said, look, you know what you have in Eretz Yisrael? You have very sweet, delectable fruits. Zavas Cholov Advashi Vezepiria, but you don't have anything in there that you can actually live off of. Here we have, Rabbi Yochanan just ate 1,000 of these fruits, and he feels like he hadn't eaten anything at all because they're very sweet, but they're also very insubstantial. So the Meraglim were complaining Eretz Yisrael was the same way. So the Gemara continues further on this topic about again, we said that when you're eating sweet fruit, then after you may need to eat some kind of salty thing with it in order to blunt sweetness a little bit. So Ki Osir of Dimi Omer, when Rav Dimi came from Eretz Yisrael, he reported something similar. Ir achas hoysele li yanei amelach baharam melach. Yanai HaMelech owned a certain city in Har HaMelech. Har HaMelech is an area of Eretz Yisrael. Nobody's really sure nowadays where it is, but whatever. It was an area that we find in the Gemara Gittin and the Sugya about the Churban. It was very, very thickly settled. There were hundreds of thousands of little shtetlach over there, each one with not just little shtetlach, hundreds of thousands of cities over there, each one with many people. So there was a very fertile and very well populated area. So Yanai HaMelech, one of the kings of Achashmenoim, owned a particular city over there. Shahoyim Matsian Mimena Samach Ribos Sifle Tris, Shabbos. Every Erev Shabbos, that city would supply 600,000 bowls full of tris. Tris is minced fish. It actually says like tuna fish, for example. So like the ground up fish. And again, the fish was salted, so they would supply 600,000 bowls of that for those who were cutting figs. And you find throughout Shas that after they harvested figs, they would cut them and they would make a gulay dveil out of them. They would cut them and make pressed cakes of figs out of them, and that served as a long term storage for the food. So now, every Erev Shabbos, you'd have so many people going out and harvesting figs in this one city, from Har HaMelech. And again, they had to, because the figs are sweet, and they would be eating some of their, they'd be eating some of them on the job, as they're allowed to, up the halacha, therefore, they needed something sharp to go along with it, so therefore, they would supply them with tris, and there were so many of these workers that they needed 600,000 bowls of this ground-up fish, every Erev Shabbos, just for those workers. Showing, in other words, how big and well populated that city was. Many places. Yeah, that you have the Gemara in Gittin. You have places in the Medrash on Eichar Rabba that mention the idea how enormous the population of Eretz Yisrael was in the times of the Beis Mikdash, and how nowadays we think that Eretz Yisrael was well populated. It has about 8 million or so Jews in it, but doesn't begin to hold a candle to the numbers that we find in the Gemara and in the Medrash. But we know that Eretz Yisrael has a much greater, the Gemara mentions the idea, Eretz Tzvi, Ksivba, that Eretz Yisrael expands as there are more Jews in it.
What?
6 million, I don't know, Kenzine. Okay, whatever it is, anyway. I don't know, Kenzine. Okay, whatever it is, yeah, 6 or 8 million, either way, Ken Yubu, yeah. Since we're talking about how fertile Eretz Yisrael was and how well populated it was, so the Gemara mentions a couple of other things in this regard. He also Ravin Amar, when Ravin came from Eretz Yisrael, he reported, Elon Echad Hoyle the Yanai HaMelech Bahar HaMelech. This same Yanai HaMelech owned a particular tree in Har HaMelech. Three times a month, they would be able to take from it. You'd have new, a bricha is a clutch of new birds, of new chicks that are hatched out of eggs. So three times a month, they would be able to take out of it 40 sa of newly hatched chicks. Three times a month, just from the one tree. So in other words, the one tree had so many birds' nests in it. And those birds were so prolific in laying eggs and having them and babies hatching out of the eggs that they could collect 40 sa of newborn chicks at once every 10 days out of that tree.
One tree.
We're saying that one tree alone had so many birds' nests in it. Yeah. He also Rav Yitzchak Amar, and then when Rav Yitzchak came, he said, "I'll give you another example of this one. Not so much about how well populated Eretz Yisrael was, but something else where we find how careful they were as for in matters of Yuchsin and Eretz Yisrael. Ir achas hoyse be'Eretz Yisrael beGufnis Shema. There was a certain city in Eretz Yisrael by the name of Gufnis. Shahoyu b'shmoinim zugas achim koyanim. In that city, there were 80 pairs of brothers who were koyanim. Nisuin the shmoinim zugas achoyas koyanis, where each of the pairs of brothers was married to a pair of sisters who were also bnois koyanim." So you have, in one family, you have two brothers who are koyanim, and they would be married to two sisters who are bnois koyanim. And in the next family, you would also have the same thing. And the next one, and you had 80 such families like that. You had 80 such families like that.
Right.
So let's
use the names of some of the koyanim here we have in Shul.
You'd have, let's say, two brothers Blasovsky, who are married to two daughters of Shlomo Cohen. and then you'd have two. Then you'd have two. You'd have the, let's say, the two brothers. The two brothers Lipsker are married to two daughters of Shlomo Neufeld, and so forth. And you have like that. You had like that going right through. You had 80 sets like that. The specialty of that, Marsha says, is they were so careful about Yuchsin. As much as possible, they wanted that a Kohen should marry a Bas Kohen. We find in the Gemara in Pesachim that the Gemara says that really is the best possible thing. When a Bas Kohen marries a Yisrael, the Gemara says not necessarily always such a good thing. Often we find Ein Zivugan Ola Yotha. The point is that one idea is, you asked why doubt the brothers. There is actually a point. Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid has his famous tzava, where he gives a bunch of instructions in there, and one of them is, he says, and there's a lot of discussion whether these instructions are only for his descendants or for all the Jewish people. Anyway, he says that two brothers shouldn't marry two sisters. So one of the proofs they bring against them, what about Or Gemara? We see after they did that. On the other hand, the counterexample is that we find that this city eventually, we don't have it here in this Gemara, but we have it elsewhere in Shas, that eventually that city and that whole area was destroyed. So it may not be such a good thing. Lemaisa, you have some people say we don't have to be nizer in it. Some people say we should be nizer in it. The Rebbe would write to many people, and he mentioned the example of his own family. Reb Levi Yitzchak, the Rebbe's father, had a brother, and the two of them were married to two sisters. Reb Levi was married to Rebbe Tzimchana. His brother was married to Rebbe Tzimchana's sister, and the Rebbe Rashab told them, fine, go ahead and do it, but don't live in the same city. So here you have, they all lived in the same city. So in fact, there is some discussion among Achronim that has to do with why we're stressing that it was brothers. They weren't necessarily nizer in this idea of Tzavas or Yehuda HaChassid.
Not to live in the same place.
Not to live in the same place, right. So anyway, but here we're saying they all lived in the same place. So the Gemara mentions in Pesachim, the point is like this. When a Yisrael marries a Bas Kohen, you think about it, it means that now she can't eat Truma anymore. And it also means she can't eat Chaz V'Shoik anymore. So if the husband is a Talmud Chacham, then at least that makes up for that, and therefore it's a good thing. But an Amar Oretz in particular marries a Bas Kohen, then often the Gemara says Ein Zivugan Ola Yotha. It doesn't work out. The Shidduch doesn't work out well. This is, by the way, why we have the minhag that when Yisrael gets engaged to a Bas Kohen, he makes sure to learn at least one Masechta. People learn Masechta Kala. People learn some other short Masechta, but at least you know one Masechta inside out. Then therefore you can be considered a Talmud Chacham, and therefore we can say Zivugan. Anyway, so here we had, they were very careful about that. So you had 80 pairs of brothers married to 80 pairs of sisters. And Rabbi Yitzchok is saying, the Chachamim in the later time were curious whether we have any such thing nowadays. The Chachamim checked between Surah and Nahadah, which are the two main cities where Jews lived in Babel, and they couldn't find such an example. The only example they could find was the two daughters of Rav Chista, who Rav Chista was a Kohen, so his daughters are Benoist Kohenim, to have a Nesivim, the Rami Bachoma, or Ma'ukva Bachoma. The two sisters were married to two brothers, Rami Bachoma and Ma'ukva Bachoma, and even that is not quite the same thing as in Gufnis, because V'achagab de'inhi havu kahanta, they are Benoist Kohenim, Inhu I have a Kani, but the two brothers, the two husbands, are not Kohenim. So that's the closest example they could find to the way they had in Gufnis in the good old days, and even then it wasn't two Kohenim married to two Kohenis, but rather two Yisraelim married to two Kohenis. And by the way, the Gemara mentions elsewhere that Rami Bachoma at least passed away young, so that might be another example of this thing of Tzavas or Yehuda HaChassid, that they were living in the same city, and two brothers married to two sisters, and there was a degree of an Ayin Hara, and therefore it had an effect. Which is again why you have the Hagah from the Rebbe Rashab and from the Rebbeim after him that if you do that then you shouldn't live in the same city. Okay, the Gemara goes on to talk about now. So the Gemara discusses the question: what foods do you say bore nefashos afterwards? Now we know what do you mean. You ask any 3-year-old, they can tell you. You say bore nefashos after anything that you don't say the other after brachos on. But the Gemara actually discusses maybe not necessarily. Maybe actually only some foods are considered important enough to even say an after bracha on. Maybe there are some foods that are considered so unimportant that there wouldn't be an after bracha on at all. So the Gemara discusses. The Gemara has a sugya about the ins and outs of it. One thing it mentions is that eggs, for example, eggs and meat would be things that are important enough to say bo nefashos on, but not necessarily vegetables. And then the Gemara goes into different opinions about it, and it ends up saying the halacha is we say bo nefashos on all of them. So now, in this connection, the Gemara brings, so what's so good about eggs? So Omer Rabbi, Kol Shehu Kabeitza Beitza Toiva Mimenu. Whenever you have a kabeitza size worth of food, an actual egg, which is that same size, is better than it. So in other words, you have, let's say, a kabeitza of vegetables, or a kabeitza of bread, or of meat, or whatever. Or whatever. Actually, Gemara is going to say meat is an exception, but anything else, a beitza is better for you than a beitza volume of some other kind of food. He also Robin Omar. When Robin came from Eretz Yisrael, he said there's more details about that. Tova be'osim megugulta, an egg which is megugulta, which means that it's soft boiled. Megugulta literally means rolls. And Marsha explains based on a Rashi elsewhere that we call it that because when a raw egg you can't spin. Useful household tip. You have a carton of eggs in the fridge and you don't know if they're raw or not. Try spinning them. If they don't spin, you know they're raw. What? Well, you can break them also, but if you don't want to break them. So what you do is you start boiling the egg. Once it's soft boiled, then already you're able to spin it. So megugelas means when you boiled it to the point where now you're able to spin it. So it's not hard boiled yet. It's only soft boiled. So that is, Robin says, is better, mishita kaisi sulta, is better than six kaisi, which is a certain measure, of fine flour. Rashi says a kaisi is a lug. So you have six lugim of fine flour, of soilus, like the quality flour they use for menachas in the Beis Mikdash. It's really good for you. But nevertheless, one soft-boiled egg is better than six of those.
Kaisi sulta,
be soilus. Right, means, yeah, so yeah. Soilus, yeah, means fine flour, yeah. He also of Dimi Omer. When Rav Dimi came from Eretz Yisrael, he gave more details. Tova be'osim gugolta mishita. Yes, like Robin said, a soft boiled egg is better for you than six logim of fine flour. Matvisa, if the egg is hard boiled, then midalid, not really boiled, actually. We should really say that we're not talking about boiled so far, but rather roasted. Soft roasted versus hard roasted. So you have, you know, like this, for example, for Pesach, for the Kaira, many people roast the eggs like this. You know, we're usually used to boiling eggs in water, but you can also roast them until they're soft boiled or hard boiled, respectively. Or I guess it could also be like you're frying them. You're frying an egg over easy versus you're frying it until it's hard, whatever. Anyway, so matvisa, if you roast it fully, then midalid, then it's not quite as good. It's only better than four logim of fine flour. Unlike if it was soft boiled, it would have been better for you. It would have been six. And muvashalta, when it's cooked as opposed to being roasted, that is when we said kol shuka beitza toiva hemenu. Then we said that anything that's the size of a beitza, the egg itself is better than it. In other words, at that point, the egg is not better than four or six log of flour. Four or six log of flour is a much larger volume than an egg. So once you've boiled it, it's not quite as good, but nevertheless, it's still better than any other than an egg size volume of any other food, levarni bistra, with the exception of meat. Meat is better for you than eggs, but other than that, an egg is better than any, but even a boiled egg as opposed to a roasted one is better for you than any other kind of than an equivalent volume of any other kind of food. Tana Rabbanan, the Gemara continues. We learn in a Braisa. So again, the Gemara goes on to discuss the matter of vegetables. Do you say? The context of this next piece of the Gemara actually is something else. The Mishnah describes over there. The Mishnah discusses what do you bench on? So we know you bench on bread. Is there anything else that you would say a full birkas hamazon on? So you have, Rabbi Gamliel says also on Shivas Aminim, we had something about that a few days ago when Rabbi Akiva was given the honor to bench and he only said Bracha Main Shalosh and Rabbi Gamliel questioned him why he did that. But then Rabbi Akiva himself actually holds, even if a person only eats boiled vegetables and that's his main meal, then Rabbi Akiva still says he'd still bench on that. So now that leads the Gemara into a discussion about eating vegetables. So the Gemara says, Tana Rabbanan, actually, what the Gemara mentions before it gets into this is specifically Rabbi Akiva is talking about, for example, he's not just talking about any kind of vegetables. He means, for example, something like cabbage, which is really good for you, as the Gemara is going to go on to say later on. So therefore, when a person boils it and eats it, then that can be considered enough of a main meal that Rabbi Akiva would say you would actually bench on it. Anyway, so Tana Rabbanan, Tchoil, if you eat the spleen of an animal, Yofel L'shinayim V'koshel of Neme'ayim. It's good for your teeth, but it's bad for your stomach. Creation, and on the other hand, leeks, is the other way around. Koshin L'shinayim V'yofel Neme'ayim. They're bad for your teeth, but they're good for your stomach. So what do you do about them? How do you get benefits without the side effect? The Gemara will tell us soon. The Braisa continues, kol yerek chai morit, any kind of raw vegetables, because the vegetables themselves, when they're raw, they're green, therefore they make your face green. They take away, it actually says, no, tear it upon him, it takes away the beauty of a person's face and makes like he gives him a greenish complexion. The whole cotton maktin, anything that is small, that's undeveloped, as the Gemara is going to say soon, how much of its development has it had to reach, maktin, it makes you small. You eat it, then it stunts your growth. So we're going to explain to the Gemara later. We don't mean something that grows naturally to a small size. We mean something that would eventually grow to a larger size, but you're eating it when it's underdeveloped. V'chol nefesh meshev is a nefesh. Anything of the soul restores the soul. Which, in other words, if you eat anything that was living, so you eat any whole thing that was living. For example, Rashi says, let's say small fish, they've grown to their full size that they're ever going to grow to, and then you eat them. So that's meshev is a nefesh. It restores the soul. It's good for you. So like we learned the other day, for example, dog and ptanim, small fish, are good for you. So now we have the same thing. When you eat those kinds of small fish, you're eating an entire creature that once was alive, then it's good for you. It restores your soul. And also anything that's close to the nefesh, the Gemara is going to explain later on what it means. Certain parts of the animal that are closer to its vital organs, meshev es hanefesh, that also restores the soul. The Braisa continues, kruv lamazon, cabbage is good for sustenance, it fills you up, it's nutritious. Utrodim l'rafua, trodim, which there's different translations what it means, it means beets or spinach or one of various other vegetables in that family. L'rafua are good, they're good for refua, they're curative, they're something that helps cure you. That's the reason why the Gemara brings this in, is because before the Gemara had said that cabbage is good for refua, and the question is that this braisa seems to be implying it's only good for mazon but not for refua. And the braisa continues, over la bias shall lefer say veras pesachai, woe to the house, which actually says means the stomach, that turnips pass through it, because turnips are not good for you, as the Gemara is going to discuss further on. Turnips. Yeah. We're going to see in the Gemara soon, we'll get to more of the details tomorrow about Hashem, what we're talking about. So the Gemara goes through one by one. We said that spleen is good for the teeth, but it's bad for your stomach. So what do you do about that? You want to get the benefits of it for your teeth. So what you should do is chew it and then spit it out. That way your teeth get the benefits from it, and your stomach doesn't have the harm of it. Then we said that leeks are the other way around. They're good. They're bad for your teeth, but they're good for your stomach. My takante. So what do? Lishlakinu v'nivleinu. What you should do is boil them until they become like a soup, and then drink them down. And that way you're not chewing them with your teeth. Kol yerek chai morit. We said any raw vegetables make your face turn pale or green. That means specifically if you eat them the first thing after you had blood. So after you had blood let, you have to eat something to restore your blood. You go nowadays to those places where you donate blood, for example, they have mazonis and orange juice. So the point is, we're saying that don't eat salad at that kind of thing, right? The Omer of Yitzchak, and Rav Yitzchak says in this connection, kol ha'ochel yerek kodem habar shos. A person who eats vegetables first thing in the morning, where it's on an empty stomach, so before 4 hours in the day, where normally people would eat their main meal of the morning 4 hours in the day, also the safer hemenu, you're not allowed to talk with such a person, because what happens is it gives the person who eats it bad breath. So therefore, you don't talk with such a person, because you're going to be affected by his bad breath. One idea might be, in other words, so whether, you know, what if you don't, I mean, you could say, in other words, the point is, you don't want, you know, you don't want that you should have a reason to look down on a fellow Yid. You're gonna see over here that he has bad breath. You're gonna think less of him, so don't do that. Don't talk with him in the first place, and that way you won't come to think less of him. Yeah. So the Gemara, so in my time, the reason is because he has bad breath. And Rabbi Yitzchok also says, in this connection, a person is not allowed to eat raw vegetables before 4 hours in the day. So not only if somebody did it, you shouldn't talk with him, but the person himself shouldn't do that in the first place. Not just for the same reason, because it'll give him bad breath. So the Gemara says, Amemo Mazutra Ravashi Havu Yasvi. One time these three Chachamim, Amemo Mazutra and Ravashi, were all sitting together. Aisu Kamayu Yer Chai Kodim Abashois. They brought to them raw vegetables, and it was before 4 hours in the morning. Amemo Ravashi Ochol Mazutra Loyochol. So Amemo and Ravashi ate from it, Mazutra did not. Amrilay Mai Daitach. So they ask him, what are you thinking that you don't want to eat? The Amrav Yitzchok Loyochol Yer Kodim Abashois Osvo Sape Menu Meshum Recha. You're saying that you're following Rav Yitzchok's first statement, that you're not allowed to talk with somebody who eats vegetables at that time because it gives them bad breath. But we're eating those vegetables, become a story spadron, and you're talking with us, so you obviously don't hold of that svara of Rav Yitzchok. So what's the problem? So he answers them, yes, but I do hold of the other statement of Rav Yitzchok. He says a person themselves is not allowed to eat vegetables before 4 hours. So you guys may not care about that, but I care about that, and therefore I'm not going to do that. Marsha explains that there can be a difference. Actually, they were eating, they held that actually Rav Yitzchok's statement is only a problem when the vegetables are cooked. So even though we had the words were yeret chai, they didn't have that version of it. They had a version that the problem is only if the vegetables are cooked. Then it causes bad breath. Well, here these are raw vegetables, so they think that there's no problem. And Mazutra is telling them, no, my version of it is that it's raw vegetables is the problem, and therefore we shouldn't, and therefore I'm not going to eat them. But on the other hand, since you're eating from it, so in other words, he's saying, even if it's not a matter of bad breath, me'ezer tam shegiyah. For whatever reason, Rabbi Yitzchok is telling us that you shouldn't eat vegetables before 4 hours, even if it's not a problem of bad breath. And fine, you guys don't have bad breath, and I have no problem talking with you. But nevertheless, there must be some other reason that Rabbi Yitzchok said that. Nothing to do with bad breath, because that wouldn't apply necessarily to raw vegetables. And nevertheless, we're going to have Kabbalah oil and accept what he says. That's what Rashi says, right? Marsha explains that why would he only hold of one versus the other is because that they held that it applies only to cooked vegetables, and Mazutra is telling them, even if that may be true as far as the bad breath, nevertheless, Rav Yitzchok also said that you shouldn't eat vegetables before 4 hours, even if they're raw, and even if we don't know the reason for it, still, we should have the bittul to him to realize that he must have had a valid reason for that, and therefore we should follow that. The minds of people don't often eat vegetables in the morning, but we often say nishtanu ativim. We often say on such things that people's natures have changed. Let's do Yom Yom Mashiach Ge'ula and Halacha, and then we'll take questions. Okay. So Yom Yom Mashiach Ge'ula Yedzayin Kislev. The Rebbe talks about we're now in the hechset zeit, in the high time of Bias Mashiach Zikenu, Hinei Zeh Melech HaMashiach Ba, and we already see how the beginning of the Pe'ula of Melech HaMashiach is already starting to affect the nations. We see already, like the Pasuk says, that they're he's judging between them and telling them off, and they're beating their swords into plowshares. This was a period when there were arms reductions going on between the United States and the Soviet Union. So that means that Hashem is giving the kings of the Umas Olam, that they are announcing the state of b'chitas u'chavoyis ha'le'itim, that they're cutting up their swords, they're getting rid of their weapons and starting to use them for peacetime purposes. So that shows that Mashiach is already having an effect on them. Halacha. We were talking about we're still talking about dinim of brachas. So now we start getting into the dinim of the kedima in brachas, of one thing going before the other, which we were just discussing in the Gemara as well. So if you have two things in front of you that have the same bracha, for example, nuts and apples, so then you have to make a bracha on one and pata the other. You can't eat one having in mind not to pata the other, because you're not allowed to cause a bracha she'en etzmicha. So you make a bracha on whichever one is more chashuv, which in a later siman, we have will define what's considered more chashuv, and with that, you pater the second one, even though you didn't mean to. On the other hand, if you make the bracha on the one that's less chashuv, then the one that's more chashuv won't be pater unless you had in mind. If you make the bracha b'stam, then you would actually have to make a second bracha, because it's not right that the less chashuv will pater the more chashuv. Then the Alter Rebbe says that no, if both of them are in front of you, then it'll be patterned either way, according to this Yeshayim, even though you didn't specifically have that in mind. So to be Yotz Midei Sofik, have in mind to patter the Choshuv when it's not in front of him, and if it's in front of him, then make the bracha on the Choshuv first to begin with. How we define Choshuv and not Choshuv, that we'll deal with in a later sin.